Hello there again, fancy folks and friends. Good evening, good morning, or whatever temporal construct you're currently inhabiting while you hide from the news cycle. Welcome back to The Overlap. I'm Joshua. You'll probably note that Will is not here with me today. The room's a little emptier. The sound waves are a little thinner. The usual frantic kinetic energy of co-host Will is absent. Will is currently, let's call it, on sabbatical. He's just decided to engage in a very personal, very analog form of systems maintenance. He is somewhere in the tactical wilderness digging a hole or building a retaining wall out of unpermitted gravel. He told me he needed to touch grass, but knowing Will, he's probably trying to encrypt the grass or find a way to smell a dandelion. So for the foreseeable future, you're stuck with me, just me, this microphone, and the soothing dystopian hum of the ventilation system and the sinus infection that I'm currently fighting. It is February 11th, 2026. I normally don't date these things, but today is my birthday and I am recording this on my birthday for tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, you're probably feeling a very specific sensation right now. It's a tightness in your chest, a sort of buzzing in your amygdala. It's the feeling of realizing that the floor you were standing on, the floor called, I don't know, civil society or the rule of law or maybe basic decency, was actually just a trapdoor, and that trapdoor has opened. You aren't watching the erosion of norms anymore. That was so 2024. That was the era of sternly worded editorials and concern from, you know, moderate senators. We're past erosion. We're in the rapid concrete consolidation phase. Project 2025 isn't just a PDF on a Heritage Foundation server anymore. It's the OS of the federal government. They didn't just drain the swamp. They paved it, put up a parking lot, and staffed the toll booth with guys named Kyle, who have extremely specific opinions about your bloodline. And because of that, today we are pivoting away. We're pivoting away from the news because, let's be honest with ourselves, right? The news is no longer information. The news is a psychic weapon. It's a series of flashbang grenades thrown into your living room to keep you disoriented. If I tell you what the president tweeted this morning about vermin, I am making you dumber. If I tell you what the Department of Homeland Security did in Minneapolis last month, and we will get to that, but not as news, as evidence, I'm just paralyzing you with fear. And fear is boring. Fear is metabolically expensive and intellectually cheap. Fear is the mind killer. It's the time waster. That's Fox News. We don't have time to waste. So avoid getting us all thrown in a van. I will, I promise. And to keep this broadcast strictly within the realm of theoretical political science and abstract cybernetics, we're going to talk about systems. We're going to talk about the biology of survival. We're going to talk about a concept that explains why every single thing you've tried to do to stop the slide into authoritarianism has failed thus far. And I know that hurts to hear. I know you've marched, you've protested, you knitted a hat, you donated to the ACLU. Maybe you canvassed for candidates who promised to restore the soul of the nation. And yet here we are, February 2026. The soul of the nation has been sold for pieces, and the receipt is being audited by a guy named Steve in a tactical vest who thinks the Federal Reserve is a satanic conspiracy. Why did it fail? It didn't fail because you didn't try hard enough, okay? Pat yourself on the back. It didn't fail because you didn't believe in yourself hard enough. It failed because you were trying to upload a poem to a toaster. You were trying to use a system of moral input to change a system of power output. You were suffering from a category error. So for the next hour, we're going to correct that error. We're going to dig into the research. We're going to explore the theory of autopoiesis. Autopoiesis. It's a Greek word. I know it sounds like some random disease you'd get, like dengue fever, but it's actually a biological concept. And it's the only exit strategy we really have. Let's set a theoretical stage to understand the cage we are in, and more importantly, how to build a key for it. Let's travel back to 1972. We're going to Santiago, Chile. The country is on the brink. The socialist governor of Salvador Allende is trying to build a new kind of society. Project CyberSign. The internet before the internet. A telex-based nervous system for a socialist economy. It was brilliant. It was kind of weird. It looked like the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. And in the middle of this fomentation, two biologists, Humberto Maturana and Francisco Varela, were asking a question that seems completely irrelevant to politics, but is actually the skeleton key to everything. They ask, what is the defining characteristic of a living thing? Like, what makes bacteria different from a crystal? What makes a frog different from a Ford Fiesta? Because if you look at them under a microscope or break them down into atoms, we're all kind of made of the same stuff, right? Carbon, iron, energy. But one of them is alive, and one of them is just a collection of parts. They came up with two categories. And I need to burn these into your brain because they're the lens through which we view the wreckage of the American experiment. Category one is the allopoietic system. Allo means other, as opposed to the previous. An allopoietic system is a machine designed to produce something other than itself, like a car factory, right? The factory is full of robots, conveyor belts, raw steel, and workers. It's a very complex, busy system. But the factory does not produce more factory. It makes cars. Here's the fatal flaw of the allopoietic system. It cannot repair itself. If a robot arm breaks, the factory stops. It creates a fault state. The factory cannot grow a new robot arm. It sits there helpless, waiting for a mechanic to come from the outside, from the environment, to fix it. It's dependent. It creates a product, but it does not create its own existence. Now I want you to think about the Democratic Party. I want you to think about your local nonprofit industrial complex, the Save the Whales organizations, the Get Out the Vote campaigns. They are allopoietic. They are factories. They're designed to produce a product, policy, votes, awareness. But they're not alive. They rely on external inputs to survive. They rely on donors. They rely on media coverage. They rely on rule of law. They rely on the environment being friendly. If the environment changes, if the donors get scared, or the media gets bought out by a tech oligarch, or law gets suspended by an autocrat, the factory breaks. And because it's allopoietic, it can't fix itself. It just sits there rusting, issuing press releases about how unprecedented the rust is. So let's look at category two, autopoietic systems. Auto means self. Poiesis means creation. An autopoietic system produces itself like a single cell. A cell takes in matter and energy from the outside, sure. It eats sugar, it breathes oxygen, but it uses that energy to manufacture its own parts. Proteins, lipids, organelles, cell walls. I was going to say the powerhouse of the cell. And those parts, in turn, interact to regenerate the network that produced them. It's a closed loop. It's a snake eating its own tail, but in a productive way. If you cut your skin, you don't need a skin mechanic to install a patch, right? The system detects the breach, it manufactures the repair, it knits itself back together. A living system creates its own boundary. It defines the difference between self and world. It says, everything inside this membrane is me, and I'm responsible for me. This is the pivot. This is where we lost. The right wing, the MAGA movement, the Christo-fascist apparatus, they figured this out years ago instinctively. They didn't read Chilean biology textbooks, but they understood power. They stopped building factories. They started building organisms. They built churches that act as schools. They built media ecosystems that act as reality tunnels. They built militias that act like police. They built a system that generates its own truth, its own law, and its own money. They achieved operational closure. They don't care what the New York Times says. The New York Times is outside the membrane, so it's irrelevant. And we, the left, the liberals, the defenders of democracy, we keep trying to be mechanics, right? We kept trying to file paperwork to fix a machine that's actively trying to eat us. We treated the state as an open system. We thought if we just input enough shame and enough facts and enough votes, the machine will output justice. But the machine's been reprogrammed. The machine has achieved its own form of autopoiesis. The state is now a closed loop. It no longer processes dissent as feedback. It processes dissent as a pathogen. And what does an immune system do to a pathogen? It doesn't debate it. It doesn't compromise with it. It isolates it. It raises the temperature and it kills it. I'm thinking about Renee Good and Alex Preddy. I'm thinking about Minneapolis, January 7th. I know we've all been trying not to think about it. It's easier to scroll past it, but I want to dwell on it for a moment. Not as a tragedy, though it is a terrible, soul-sucking tragedy, but as a data point in a cybernetic analysis. 37 years old, just a person, driving down the street, sees a checkpoint, men in camo, no badges, guns in bad attitude. So she does what any rational person does when confronted with a predator. She tries to go around, but they executed her in the street in broad daylight, same with Alex Preddy. Now, watch the systems react. The liberal system, right? The mayors, the governors, the good ones, they froze. Why did they freeze? Because they experienced a code failure. This brings us to Nicholas Luhmann, a German sociologist who wrote a book so dense that it can stop small caliber bullets. It's really, really long. Luhmann said that society is differentiated into systems that cannot actually understand each other because they speak different languages, right? It's a Tower of Babel as a society. The economy only understands the code of payment or non-payment, right? And science only understands true or false, and the political system only understands government versus opposition. When ICE agents killed Renee Good and Alex Preddy, the liberal system looked at the event and tried to process it with the code of legal illegal. They said, this is illegal. It violates the Fourth Amendment. Their system output a signal of stop, but the authoritarian system, the Trump administration, the DHS, operates now on a code of power and impotence. So when liberals output illegal, authoritarians heard nothing. It was static. It was a file format they don't support. They looked at the event and said, we have the power to do this, therefore it's done. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem went on TV and called her a domestic terrorist. Vance called her classic terrorism. And the administration asserted absolute immunity. This was not a mistake. That wasn't some rogue agent. That was the system working perfectly. That was the state telling you, we have achieved operational closure. Your laws are outside our membrane. Your shame is outside our membrane. Your reality is outside our membrane. That is why you feel crazy. You are screaming true at a system that only hears power. And you are screaming illegal at a system that only hears friend or enemy. So if we accept this premise, and I think looking out the window today, we have to accept this premise, that the state is closed. It's a closed, hostile organism that cannot be talked out of eating us alive. What is the logical conclusion? Do we give up? Do we go and accelerate? Do we retreat into the woods and trade pine cones and wait for the heat death of the universe? Maybe not. We adopt the strategy of the virus. Better yet, it's called the strategy of parallel evolution. We must become autopoietic. We have to stop trying to capture the state and start trying to make it irrelevant. We need to build a machine that builds itself. We need a nervous system that doesn't use their satellites. We need a metabolic system that doesn't use their supply chains. We need an economic system that doesn't use their currency. We need an immune system that doesn't rely on their policing. We need a structural coupling where our system becomes so dense, so resilient, so structurally sound that the state breaks its teeth trying to bite us. We need to become indigestible. So for the rest of this, we're going to do the dangerous work. We're going to open the hood, but we aren't just going to theorize. We're going to look at the blueprints. We're going to look at Stafford Beer's viable system model, which was designed to run the economy of Chile before the CIA blew it up. We're going to adapt it for survival in 2026 America. We're going to break it down. We're going to talk about system one, the nervous system, because if we can't talk to each other without Elon Musk reading our DMs, we are DOA. We're going to talk about system two, the metabolic system, because a revolution cannot feed itself if it will starve in 3 days. We're going to talk about system three, the economic system, because we need to stop paying for our own oppression. And we're going to talk about system four, the immune system, because they will come for us and we will need to be ready to swarm. I'm going to take a drink of water. You should probably too. Hydration is the first step of autopoiesis. Stay tuned. We're about to clear this up and start building our little mesh. All right, welcome back now. So we've established the premise, the state is a closed loop. It's a predator. It does not speak your language. Therefore, we have to stop trying to shout at it and start building a system that can survive despite it. We must become autopoietic. But how? Autopoiesis is a nice word to say at the dinner party, and I'm sure you think it makes me sound so smart on this podcast, but I had to look it up to see if there was a concept for what I was trying to say. But it's not a tactic, right? You can't eat a concept. You can't hide behind a theory when an ice van pulls up. So let's take a look at the toolbox. Now, I am an engineer at heart, and so let's talk about the viable system model. Now, this was developed by Stafford Beer. He was a British cyberneticist who looked like a wizard and drank whiskey like a sailor to run the economy of Chile in the early 70s. He broke down any viable organism, a cell, a human, a state, into five systems. So today we're going to look at the first two, the nervous system and the metabolic system. Let's start with the nervous system. I want you to take your phone out of your pocket and look at it. That smooth glass brick is a miracle of engineering. It connects you to the entire sum of all human knowledge. It lets you argue with strangers in real time. It also includes a tracking collar. We've talked about this in our previous podcasts. Every time you use it, even if you're using it with Signal, even if you're using it with a VPN, even if you're using Graphene OS, even if you think you're being clever, you are riding on infrastructure owned by the state and its corporate landlords. The cell towers, Verizon owns them. T-Mobile owns them. AT&T owned them. The government can absolutely subpoena all logs. The undersea cables that allow us to communicate with England and with all of the other countries and the islands? The NSA has the ability to tap them. So if the administration decides to pull the plug like they did in Egypt in 2011, and like they do in Kashmir very often, like they threatened to do in Minneapolis literally last month, that brick, that smooth and shiny iPhone, becomes a paperweight. And a revolution that cannot talk is a revolution that cannot think. So, if we're going to build an autopoietic movement, we need a nervous system that relies on itself, not on a host organism. We need to go off-grid. We need mesh networks. Specifically, I want to talk about LoRa, L-O-R-A, long-range radio. If you haven't heard of this, write it down, research it, take a look. It uses low-frequency radio waves, in this case, the 915 megahertz spectrum here in the U.S., to send small packets of data over miles. It skips cell phone towers entirely. It skips the internet, although you can connect them to the internet. It's basically a walkie-talkie for text messages. You buy a device like the T-Echo or the T-Beam or the Helltech V3 or V4. Costs about $50. It looks like a little white pebble with a screen. You pair it with your phone via Bluetooth. You type a message. It blasts it out over radio waves. And here's the magic part. Every other device in range picks it up and repeats it. It hops from me to you to the guy down the street to the next town over. It is a self-healing, decentralized web of communications. They can't shut it down unless they jam the entire radio spectrum, which would also break their own garage door openers and baby monitors and cordless phones. Now, I also want to talk about a specific protocol called Amigo. This kind of solves the crowd problem. See, if you're in a big protest and everyone is broadcasting all at once, the radio waves get jammed. It's too much noise. It's a traffic jam of data. But Amigo is a brilliant concept that mimics biology. It segments the crowd into cliques. Your phone, using Bluetooth low energy, talks to your nearest 10 neighbors. You form a little cluster. Then a lead node from your cluster talks to the next cluster. It's cellular. Not like cell phones, like the cell we talked about earlier. It's exactly how your brain works. Your neurons don't all scream at once. They fire in waves. This isn't sci-fi, right? This is code you can download right now on GitHub. Every organizer needs this in their backpack. Because when the lights go out, it's the only way you're going to find your friends. But you can't eat a radio. And a nervous system needs energy to fire, which brings us to system number two, the metabolic system, or, you know, lunch. A revolution that cannot feed itself will starve. And right now, our metabolism is incredibly fragile. We rely upon a supply chain owned by three massive monopolies that relies upon diesel trucking. It then relies on just-in-time logistics. It breaks if gas prices go up 50 cents. And if the state wants to crush a neighborhood, they don't have to shoot anyone. They don't even have to send in tanks. They close the grocery stores, creating a food desert, and wait for hunger to do the work. We saw this very actively during the pandemic. We saw empty shelves. We saw grocery stores that were just out of stuff. That was a preview. That was a trailer for the movie that we could be living in a very short period of time from now. So ultimately, what we need is food sovereignty, right? And I don't mean victory garden in your backyard. Gardens are great. I like tomatoes and cucumbers and bell peppers, if you can grow them. But a garden is a hobby. A garden feeds you. We need an infrastructure. We need a system that can feed a neighborhood. That's where we kind of bring in the 4P model. Procurement, processing, pantry, plate. Here's how it works. Organizations that value these sort of things, DSA chapters, mutual aid groups, unions, they need to stop acting like charities and start acting like aggregators. First step, procurement. Go to the rural farmers, the ones who are getting crushed by big ag, the ones that are one bad harvest away from foreclosure. And we make a deal. We say, look, we will buy your harvest, direct contract, cash up front. we bypass the grocery store monopoly entirely. Step two, processing. We need community canneries, dehydrators, fermentation labs. We take that harvest and we turn it into shelf-stable calories. We create a strategic reserve because when the crisis hits, you don't need fresh lettuce. You need calories to last through the winter. Step three, the pantry. Not a food bank where you beg for scraps. That's the charity model. That is allopoietic. We build a co-op store where members shop for free or at cost, where labor is the currency. Step four is the plate, community kitchens. Feeding people hot meals every day, not just because people are hungry, but because eating together creates togetherness and solidarity. It creates a social glue that holds the cell together. This does two things. One, it feeds a revolutionary force. It makes us independent of the corporate supply chain. And two, it creates a structural coupling between the rural farmer and the urban worker. See, right now, the authoritarian regime controls the rural areas because they control the narrative, the information in and out. They tell the farmer, look, the city people, they hate you. They want to take your truck. But if the socialists are the ones keeping the small family farm in business, if we are the ones buying the corn, that breaks this cultural deadlock. It reminds the rural working class that their enemy isn't the woke mob in the city. Their enemy is the corporate monopoly that's trying to foreclose on their land. The potato becomes a political argument. And believe me, that is much more convincing of an argument than a single tweet from Fox News. So we have a nervous system, the Laura I talked about earlier. We have a metabolic system, food sovereignty. We can talk and we can eat. Still have a problem. Buying radios and buying corn costs money. And if we use Visa and MasterCard, they can shut that off in a heartbeat. We saw it with the truckers. We saw it with WikiLeaks. Debanking is the silent killer. Donald Trump is currently suing JPMorgan Chase for allegedly debanking him. So how do we pay for the revolution without using Caesar's coins? How do we build an economy that's essentially invisible to the IRS? That would be the third system, the economic system. That's where things, at least from my perspective, get pretty interesting. We're going to talk about dual power economics. So credit unions, we're going to talk about why and how you can probably stop paying your debts, but stay tuned. We've built the radio, we planted the corn, we established that we can talk to each other without Elon Musk reading our DMs, and we can feed ourselves without asking permission from Walmart or Kroger. But now comes the part that usually kills any revolution before it even gets out of the group chat. The part that everyone hates talking about because it's boring, until suddenly the only thing that matters is this. System three, the economic system. I know. You want to talk about barricades. You want to talk about resistance. You don't want to talk about fractional reserve banking or credit unions. But the reality is revolutions die when money runs out. Or more accurately, in our day and age, revolutions die when access to your money runs out. Think back to that Canadian trucker protest a few years ago or the WikiLeaks blockade before that. What did the state do? Did they send in tanks immediately? No. Did they start shooting? No. They called Visa and MasterCard and froze their accounts. They turned off the crowdfunding, and suddenly you have a movement that literally can't buy gas, can't buy food, can't pay bail. It's called debanking. In a digitized economy, it is the ultimate nonviolent weapon. If your entire movement relies on the Bank of America checking account and a GoFundMe page, you're already dead. You just haven't checked your balance yet. So how do you pay for a system like this without using Caesar's coins? How do we build an economy that's invisible to the Department of Homeland Security? That is what I talked about earlier, dual power economics. This isn't about buying Bitcoin. I mean, spare me the crypto pitch. I already have some, and it's kind of a nightmare. This is about building a closed loop. Here's the strategy. It's radical, but it's necessary. Step one is the exodus. Move your money, all of it. Get it out of the four big banks: JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citi, and Bank of America. These institutions are basically extensions of the federal government. They will freeze you without a warrant if DHS asks nicely. They have a suspicious activity report that will trigger automatically if you buy too many supplies. Just move it to a local credit union. Ideally, a community development financial institution, or CDFI. Because credit unions are co-ops. You are a member. You are not a customer. They're harder to bully. They're also much slower to comply with federal overreach. And most importantly, they keep capital in the community. Step two is the circulation. This is the hard part. We need to stop spending money and start circulating it. If I pay you $50 for a widget and you take that $50 and you spend that at Walmart, the money is gone. It's left the ecosystem. It's gone back to the enemy. It's the funding, the very system that is trying to crush us. But if I pay you $50 and you spend it at the community pantry that we talked about in system two, and the pantry pays the local farmer and the farmer pays the mechanic who accepts local credit, the money stays inside. It builds equity within the movement. We need to create internal markets where the dollar bill dies and is reborn as a solidarity credit. It sounds like sci-fi. In fact, in a lot of ways, it sounds like I'm talking about something illegal. All of these things are perfectly legal, perfectly reasonable to do within our own system without breaking any of our current laws. I'll give you an example from Mondragon in Spain. And so look at the Zapatistas in Chiapas. What did they do first? They built banks. Then they built schools. Then they built hospitals. They didn't ask the state for a budget. They became the budget. They realized that financial independence is the only thing that guarantees political independence. Okay? So we have radios, food, and money. We are building a functional society inside the shell of the old one. Inside. And here's the dark truth. Once you start doing this, once you start becoming competent at this, the predator is going to notice. The state ignores the weak. It attacks the strong. And when they see a neighborhood that feeds itself, polices itself, they don't see community, they see insurgency. Which brings us to system number four, the immune system. I want to be very, very, very clear about this for a lot of reasons. When I say defense, I do not mean paramilitary. I do not mean guys in tactical vests playing soldier in the woods. If you try to fight the United States government in a symmetric shooting war, you will lose. They have drones, they've got tanks, they have heat-seeking missiles, ICBMs, bunker busters. You have a surplus rifle and a bad knee. Do the math. Symmetric warfare is suicide. We need an immune response. Think about how your body fights a virus. It doesn't nuke itself with chemotherapy. Doctors do that. That was a joke. Sorry. It sends white blood cells to surround the intruder, to isolate it, to make it absolutely impossible for the intruder to move or replicate itself. That is swarm defense. There's a concept from the Jewish Socialist Bund called Doigkeit, which means here-ness. We fight where we are. We defend this street, this block, this neighbor. So here's the tactic. Ungovernability. When ICE shows up like they did in Minneapolis and are coming to other cities near you, do not shoot at them. You don't give them any reason to escalate. You swarm. You flood the street, 500 people, grandmas, kids, neighbors. You block the road with cars that have magically broken down, with blasting music, with shining lights, and you film everything. I said film, video, whatever. Put it on YouTube, put it on Facebook, whatever you need. You make the cost of enforcement so high You make it so that for every person they try to arrest, they have to fight through a layer of 500 people who are just standing there, passively, obstinately. It's kind of the non-Newtonian fluid strategy, right? You've seen the experiment where if you punch water, the water kind of moves and splashes everywhere. But if you take cornstarch and you mix that with the water, when you punch that cornstarch, that turns to concrete. If you move slow and steady, you can get your hand inside of there. But if you just smack that thing, your hand is like exactly like punching the same hardness as concrete. You have to make the neighborhood so dense, so sticky, so annoying to these people that they decide it's not worth the paperwork. They retreat. And not because they lost a battle, but because they couldn't complete the transaction. This is how we survive. We're not going to win by killing the enemy. We cannot kill them. We win by making it impossible for the enemy to kill us. We create a zone of operational closure where their laws just can't be enforced because there's nobody willing to enforce them. So we have the nervous system, that's the LoRa radio, the metabolic system, the food, the economic system, which is your money, the immune system for defense, that's the machine. But every machine needs a purpose. It needs a destination. We're not just trying to survive the next 4 years. We're all guilty of that, if I can just survive the next 3 years. But then it's just a system outside of ourselves that we continually depend on. Survival is the floor, not the ceiling. We're trying to build something that lasts 100 years. Let's play the long game. So we've built this machine. We have the nerves, the gut, the wallet, the shield. Now comes the question that keeps you awake at 3 a.m. The question that makes you doom scroll until your eyes burn, and I know you're doing it because I am. What happens next? How does this end? If you listen to the fascists from history and authoritarians from history, they had their answer, and our fascists and our authoritarians have their answer. It's called Project 2025. And 2025 is the year that it starts. Their timeline goes on forever. They see a 1,000-year Reich of red hats and closed borders. If you listen to the liberals, the ones who are still left, the ones who haven't fled to Canada or retreated to internal exile, their answer is, we got to vote hard in the midterms, 2026. We got to vote hard in 2028. Just hold your breath. Just survive two more years. The pendulum will swing back. The institutions will self-correct. But if you're listening to this show, you know the truth. You know that holding your breath underwater is a perfect way to drown. You know that the institutions aren't going to self-correct because the people running them removed the correction mechanism. This administration has fired the inspectors, packed the courts, gerrymandered the maps. The pendulum isn't swinging back. The pendulum has been welded to the wall. So we need our own timeline. We need a Project 2029. This is the concept of the long game. We aren't just trying to survive the next 4 years. If survival is the baseline, if all we do is not die, we lose. Because eventually, they will get lucky. Eventually, they will find a crack in the armor. They will find a loophole in the law. We need to build the thing that will be left standing when their system cracks under its own incompetence. And make no mistake, it will crack. Fascism is, by definition, a suicide cult. It eats its own tail. It purges the experts because they're disloyal. It ignores the science because it's woke. It breaks the economy because it's globalist. Eventually, the bridges fall down. Eventually, the power grid fails because the guy running it was hired for his loyalty, not his engineering degree. Eventually, the dollar collapses because nobody trusts a government run by people who think the Fed is a conspiracy theory. The system creates low variety responses to high variety problems. It becomes brittle. And things that are brittle always shatter. And when that happens, the state fails. Who picks up the pieces? The truth is, the only question that really matters, right? If we are organized, we pick up the pieces. If we are not, welcome back the era of warlords, because they will pick up the pieces, put them in their own pockets, and we're just fighting the same thing all over again. This brings us to the final concept of this podcast is prefigurative politics. That sounds boring, and it kind of is. It's just a fancy academic term for a very simple idea. Build the future that you want in the present. Don't wait for some revolution and wait for that first shot that was heard around the world to build it. Build the world that is the revolution. Think about it this way. If you want a world without ice, you don't just abolish ice and hope for the best. That creates a vacuum. You build restorative justice circles now. You prove they work. You handle disputes in your neighborhood without calling 911. You make police irrelevant before you make them illegal. If you want a world without hunger, you don't just lobby for better food stamps. You build food hubs right now. You feed the people better than the state does. You create a demonstration effect. Now, look, I don't stand for getting rid of the police. I don't think we need to get rid of the police. I in fact, am friends with a few police officers, very few. We need the police in our current system, and they protect the people who currently can't protect themselves. What I'm talking about is creating a system where the police are not necessary, so it's never a question of defunding them. It's that they don't ever get deployed. They're bored. That's the goal. When the neighbor sees that you have a pantry that has fresh vegetables and the grocery store has empty shelves, you don't have to convince them of your ideology. A potato will convince them. The potato is the propaganda. Competence is the only ideology that matters in a crisis. And that is the cure for the freeze. That sinking feeling you're feeling right now, that tightness in your chest, the feeling of I can't do anything, that comes from helplessness. That comes from being a spectator in this disaster movie called the United States right now. You are watching the car crash, but you aren't driving. One of the biggest nightmares that I have is that I am driving and I'm going fast and I lose my ability to see. And I'm freaking out, but nothing I do gas pedal wise or brake pedal or emergency brake, nothing seems to be working the car. And I can hear the sounds and I know that I'm going to wreck and I'm going to fall and or I'm going to die or I'm going to hit the wall or hit another car or something to that effect. And then I wake up in a start, and it's because of that loss of control and the ability to perceive and see what's happening in our own environment. Action cures fear. Agency takes care of the depression that you're feeling about this stuff. Now, obviously, depression is a real thing. Maybe see a doctor if you're experiencing symptoms and signs of clinical depression. What I'm talking about is that depression that you're currently feeling over the state of things right now. Planting the corn, soldering the radio, chairing the meeting, that reconnects the feedback loop, right? It reminds you that you're not just a victim of history, that you are one of the writers. So here is the timeline, or at least a timeline for Project 2029. Year one, that's this year, we build, this is the survival and connection year. We build mesh networks, we secure the food supply, we move our money, we stop the bleeding, we survive the purge. Year two, that's 2027. That's the expansion and competence. That's when we start scaling up. The pantry becomes a grocery store. The mesh network covers the whole city. We start to solve problems that the state can't solve or won't. We fix the potholes. We clean the water. Year three, the irritant phase. We become so big, the state has to do something. We create structural coupling. We force concessions, not by asking, but by existing. We become our own shadow state. By year four, 2029, when the brittle system cracks, when the dollar fails or the grid goes down, or the regime decides to eat itself, that's where we are. We don't have to take over. We just are. We just step into the vacuum and be like, hey, let's just continue this. It sounds ambitious. God, it sounds impossible. But take a look at history. Look at the Polish Solidarity Movement, right? They built a parallel state under Soviet rule. Look at the Black Panthers. They fed children when the U.S. government wouldn't. You could take a look at the Zapatistas that we've talked about on the show before. They've been running their own autonomous zone for 30 years. It's been done. It is being done. So the question isn't, can we win? The question is, are you building? So look, we spent the first entire part of this episode in the bunker, in the foxhole. We've looked at the predator, right? We've built the machine. We've moved the money. We've secured the perimeter. And I know it was heavy, right? Like, I know autopoiesis and operational closure aren't pillow talk. But here's the good news. The machine we just described, the one that feeds itself and heals itself and protects itself, that isn't just a survival strategy, right? Like, that's also a life. If you think about building here, a neighborhood where you know who your neighbor are, like, know who your neighbors are. You know their names. You know their kids' names. A food system where we know the farmer who grew your corn, who grew your beef. An economy where your money stays on your block instead of flying off to a hedge fund in Connecticut. A life where you aren't just a consumer, but a creator. Even if the jackboots weren't at our door, isn't that a world that we wanted anyway? The crisis has just given us the permission to stop waiting and start building it. It's kind of clarified the mission, especially for me. You might have heard, you know, the progress and the progression of these podcasts, my solo ones. It's about not just surviving tyranny, right? We are finally, after all these years of alienation and scrolling, learning how to be human again, building smaller and smaller circles that we then scale up to be bigger and bigger and bigger. It's my bluegrass jam. It's, you know, the Meshtastic Network. It's ham radio operation. It's joining clubs and organizations and the choir and anything that you're a part of is where you can start these beautiful and wonderful circles and remind yourself of what it's like to be a human being. So here's your assignment for the week. Don't doom scroll on Reddit tonight or Facebook or whatever your doom scrolling platform is. Put your phone on your bedside table, plug it in. Don't turn it off just in case there's an emergency, but find three people, right? Just three. Tell them about Amigo. Tell them about a mesh network. Tell them about a pantry idea you've had. Talk to your friend who's a farmer and say, hey, look, what would it cost if we just footed the bill for the things that you grow? Talk to them about a credit union account, right? Or set up your own credit union account or just ask them if they want to share a plot in a community garden. Start building the cell. Again, not the weirdo cell. Society has ruined me because anytime I think cell, I think prison cell or terrorist cell. None of those. Just the cell. Start it. Start the cell. Because the body politic is sick. The immune system of the state is failing, but the cells are waking up, and there are millions of us, 340 million or so now. And as Renee Nicole Good and Alex Preddy's memory reminds us, they have the guns, but we have the life. And life, if it's organized, right, if it's stubborn enough, always finds a way through the crack in the concrete. Read the interweb, build the mesh, stay dangerous. I'm Joshua. This has been The Overlap. If you enjoyed this deep dive into the cybernetics of survival, please do the things that help us keep the lights on in this wonderful, wonderful internet studio. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. The algorithm is, as always, a very fickle god, and it demands sacrifice in the form of 5 stars. Share the episode. Send it to your friend who thinks the election's going to fix everything. Send it to your friend who is doom scrolling. Send it to Advisor Steve if you have his number. We all remember him. You can find us on the socials. We are on Mastodon and Blue Sky because we practice what we preach about decentralized networks. Come tell us your theory on what Will is actually doing in the woods right now. My money is on trying to reach a raccoon using Linux. And check out our website at fof.foundation. That's fof.foundation. We have links to the Amigo protocol, the credit union map, and a recipe for seditious salsa made from locally sourced tomatoes next week. Will should be back, assuming he hasn't completely merged with the moss. Don't fear the glitch, be the glitch, and I will see you in the garden.